I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're watching Glasgow Celtic putting on the style. It's VGC, a video game podcast with me, Jordan Midler, Chris Scullion, and Andy Robinson. This week, E3 is dead, and we killed it. But first, how are we doing, folks? Andy, I hear you've just come from the theatre. You've just come from the West End this morning.
The children's nativity play, yes. It was riveting. Mm. Really good. Good stuff.
No spoilers, but was it true to the original, or was it a new adaptation of an old classic?
No, it's a classic. Jesus wins.
Mm. You know, I thought in modern day they might change it up, make it a bit woke. You know, Chris, one of these woke nativity plays that we're all about.
I was at a nativity last week before. The daughter got one line, which is more lines than I ever got in mine. So she's quite happy with that. I believe the line was one day something magical happened to Mary. It kicks off Act 2, basically. It's an important line.
Yes. I don't understand how people remember what they did in their nativity play. I have absolutely zero memories of like anything in primary school, apart from vaguely remembering playing Pokemon Ruby for a bit in like primary 7 or something. I don't know.
Pokemon Ruby, Jesus.
I certainly wasn't Jesus, you know? I suppose he doesn't really have that big a... He's not really got a speaking role in the nativity itself, unfortunately. This week, we've got a bit of news. It's the last normal week before the Christmas fun. We'll have a very special episode of this podcast next week that I'm looking forward to greatly, because we will all be off our face on White Lightning. But other than that, let's get in to the news. Story number one, E3 is officially dead. Organizer confirms. The Entertainment Software Association has said, quote, after more than two decades of hosting an event that has served as a central showcase for the US and global video game industry, we have decided to end the show, said Stanley Pierre-Louis. We know the entire industry, players and creators alike, have a lot of passion for E3. We share that passion. We know it's difficult to say goodbye to such a beloved event, but it's the right thing to do, given the new opportunities our industry has to reach fans and partners. E3 is as old as me. It was created in 1995. And it was very much the WrestleMania of video games. Andy, this is sad news for me. How did it hit your ear?
Yeah, I mean it's sad news, but it's unavoidable, I think. But also really predictable. Yeah. It's the ESA who ran it were kind of unable or unwilling to evolve the concept, you know, to maintain relevance in the modern world, and you know, the inevitable has happened. It's not a shock, really. It's been a slow death. I think it's been a long time coming. You know, a lot of the analysis that you see now, you know, comparing like, oh, this kind of show doesn't work today, they're really talking about an E3 that hasn't existed for years anyway. You know, by the last E3, or what is now the last E3 in 2019, the West Hall. So there's two main halls at E3, South Hall and the West Hall. And there's one that's got like all of the platform holders in, and then there's one that's got everyone else, really. And the West Hall, which used to be Microsoft, PlayStation, Nintendo, was just Nintendo by 2019. I remember walking in there and you could see the bare wall of like one side, and it was so it was so jarring, because I didn't know what that wall looks like. It's like that if someone like blew up a building or chopped down like a load of trees, because there was no PlayStation or Xbox booth there. I mean, Sony didn't exhibit at all. Microsoft had moved to an external venue for I don't think it was I might be wrong, but I don't think it's the first show they did that either. And Activision and EA were long gone, you know, big publishers like those guys. And then obviously you had the awkward compromise of of them trying to let consumers in from 2017, I think it was, into a venue that's clearly not equipped to handle that scale of people and, you know, segregate business from consumers. And then so that made it worse for everyone. Excuse me. I mean, I think the LA Convention Center was a big blocker. You know, the gist of it is, this feels quite unnecessary for me, because I do think that, and if you go back and you kind of scroll through, you know, some of my comments from earlier this year, I really thought E3 was happening this year. I thought Repop would have, who were arranging this year's one, would have a good go of it. And I thought it would be positive. So to me, it feels really unnecessary that it's just all been cocked up. You know, it's just the ESA has kind of got the turning circle of a tank, you know, like they just couldn't. And the ESA is made up, it should be said, of all the publishers. So you've just kind of got like a too many cooks scenario. Nobody wants to pay millions and millions and millions for booths anymore, you know, in a venue where you can't even bring your own food. You have to buy it from the LACC, and you can't even bring all your stuff in. Like, I mean, I exhibited at GDC one year with Team 17 when we were doing ukulele, and me and the PR rolled up with a van, some TVs, and we started to get a TV out, and we almost got like shot on the spot, you know, by the unions. Like, it was like the intro to like a Batman Arkham game, like the bat. Like where we had to go, like we were told to go down like a back route entrance, and it was like, you know, lots of like environmental storytelling, like guys like, you know, cracking their knuckles and stuff on the side. I think we had to pay thousands and thousands and thousands for them to carry our TVs about 20 yards into the convention, because that's how it works, right? It's all run by the unions, and you know, companies don't want that anymore, right? At the same time, so anyway, I love digressing. I think a lot's been made of this. I mean, I love E3. E3 was like, I went to E3 on my 18th birthday. You know, a lot of us have got romantic feelings about E3 and, you know, gaming Christmas and bringing everyone together and how exciting it was. But I think it's still there. It's just changed, right? I mean, I think we need a flagship in-person industry event, because it's good for business and it's good for consumers as well. Mm-hmm. You know, that access, that in-person access, is important, because the alternative is the direct to consumer stuff, right? I mean, a lot of like, you know, social media heads like to talk about how, oh, that's wonderful, they just come straight to us. No, they're not coming straight to you. They're just like feeding you marketing. Like, yeah. The stuff like Cyberpunk, the Cyberpunk launch, happens when you don't have to bring journalists in to show them stuff. Like stuff like Battlefield, stuff like Halo Infinite, those launches happen when it's not abnormal. You don't look odd for not showing anyone anything. I mean, even Starfield, right, which has been a success, but probably arguably for a lot of people, not quite what we expected. No one saw that game at all pre-release, you know, because that's the world we live in now. In a world where you don't have to exhibit at E3, etc., you can. It's much easier for companies to hide behind their marketing. Like when you're not in you don't have a room of people live reacting to your announcements. It's so much easier to just like get away with your bullshit, right? Like you know, like if you put an underwhelming trailer out, or a price point that's not really consumer friendly, everyone in the room's going, oh, you're going to get that reaction, right? They're going to feel it. Not on a PlayStation, whatever the hell their thing's called, PlayStation, their digital showcase.
You also lose the accountability of like the Don Matrick, we have a console for you, it's the Xbox 360. That kind of stuff never happens nowadays, because one, they don't let the executives out of the pen unless they're very well media trained, like Phil. But also, it's a hyper polished kind of sterile like playlist of trailers. Chris, as someone like me who I didn't go to one because I wasn't in the game when it was going, and you were covering it from home. Do you think it's a loss, or do you think the way it's been replaced is it does the job.
I think it's a loss purely in, from a traditional point of view. Like it was always the thing that everyone got excited for. Obviously, things have replaced it now. You've got Summer Game Fest. Technically, you've got the Game Awards because, let's face it, we all basically treat that now as like a small mini E3. You've got the Gamescom opening night live now. There's get some announcements. So you get like you don't have one big thing where everyone descends from that one week. It's kind of spread out over the year now. So it's a shame that it's not there anymore. But it's not like big announcements don't happen anymore. They're just happening like 10 different places, which just makes it harder to keep track of.
I mean, that's what I was getting at, right?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, a lot's been made of like, oh, E3's gone, blah, blah. But it's not really. Like, no. If you look at what E3 became by the end, and Sony's like, you know, gave up bothering to talk to their consumers a long time ago. Nintendo and Xbox were still there, but they were some, you know, Nintendo would stop doing their press conference more than 10 years ago. You know, whether it's Summer Game Fest or something else, this year, you know, a lot of the big publishers still announced their games and did showcases in June,
yeah,
right? You know, Summer Game Fest, the in-person one, was kind of what I expected E3 to be like when it came back in a post-pandemic, you know, kind of environment. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of the big publishers, you know, kind of held their own events around LA, you know, as well as in kind of Jeff's venue. I mean, it was smaller scale, but that made it, you know, more comfortable to cover. Yeah. You know, and there's practicalities as well. Like there are fewer big games around, or there certainly were, you know, this summer, last summer, etc. And you know, that's without even talking about the practicality of like pre-release demos, because certain companies, understandably, just don't do them anymore after the pandemic. Yeah. Because what's the point? You know, so. To people at home, the vast majority of the audience, it doesn't matter that it's not in the same building. The big showcase, the June summer blowout, you know, still happened this year at a scale that you know you realistically would expect it to, and I imagine it will happen again next year.
Yeah, and in terms of the showroom floor experience, where like when they open up to the public, you get now people thinking, oh well, we'll not get to experience that sort of thing anymore. But like there are already some kind of digital storefronts that are kind of doing the experience I wanted them to do. I can remember back on the CVG podcast days, like saying, I hope that E3 would go digital at some point and do a service where people could get access to all the demos from home instead of having to go there and play them, line up to play them while some sort of assistant who's been showed the game that morning is trying to talk you through it, and it's really frustrating. Like Xbox has got its Winter Game Fest on just now, where you can download like 30 demos, and granted it's like indie games, but it's still, it gives a taste of that kind of walking over to a booth and going, oh, what is this? A game that I've never heard of, and trying it and kind of experiencing it. Steam gets its demo fests all the time. There's like 12 million demos. There are still ways to sample games to give a kind of taste of the flavour actually being at E3. You're not like barraged with sound from all levels, but that's maybe a good thing for some people. So yeah, it's a shame that for a traditional point of view that it's gone, but it's not. All the things that came with it are still there, just in a kind of scattered form.
Yeah. Andy, I wanted to ask, you were in the room where it happened, so the Game Awards. What was the... what, from your sense, what was the makeup of fans to industry people, and what were the reactions like to the big surprises, your Blades and stuff like that?
The Game Awards.
Yeah, the Game Awards.
Yeah, so for anyone listening, I came back from the Game Awards earlier this week. Most of the people in the room that I can sense, I mean, I guess maybe it's 50-50, but I definitely didn't feel like a overly consumer event. I mean, I was sat at the front with the devs and stuff and the media, so it's difficult to say. But I've got to say that there was definitely like a much bigger energy in the room. Like it felt like as close to being back at an E3 conference as we've been since the pandemic. Like it was definitely like a buzz to someone. Like when Kratos, like he came on screen, like the room kind of went off. You know, not quite at the scale of the old Sony Xbox conferences where they used to literally just let a ton of their fans in. But I don't know. There was also a vibe like the vibe in the room was like they were annoyed when some categories didn't, you know, kind of get the time on stage, and and things like that. Like you could feel that where I was sat, at least in the industry bit. But again, like it's the same as E3. I think a lot of everyone's jumping on the bandwagon this week to have the same take, right?
Yeah.
But and I think they're really missing the point of what this event is. It's a hugely successful consumer focused event, right? It's for the people at home. It's for the mainstream, and it's very difficult to juggle and put together that sort of thing and please everyone. No one can deny that it's incredibly successful as a consumer vehicle, right? Like, I mean, I'm sure they had more than 100 million streams or something last year. Mm. Like, you know, the stat that's always chucked around by the marketing guys is that it's watched by more people than the Oscars. You need to go with that in mind. It's not the DICE Awards. It's not the GDC Awards. And if you look at it in that mold, it's kind of cool that it's like Hello Games and people like that on stage, and that they're mentioning these games that man on the street, a man in Walmart, is never ever going to come across, right? Like Alan Wake is a niche game, right? I mean, we've given it a game of the year, but in the mass market, it's a niche game. Like it's not going to break the top 20, or probably not even anywhere near it this year. The fact that they performed on stage, like did a musical number in front of 100 million people potentially, mainstream, that's really cool. Yeah. So anyway, I've got a lot of sympathy for how difficult it is to put on one of those events and try and get it to work, because the bottom line is, if they did just awards, no one would watch it.
I don't understand why the backlash has started this year. It's like you say, Andy, everyone's coming to making the same point, but for some reason this year everyone's just kind of,
you know why,
really
going
heavy on it. Well,
because yeah, they're now the only game in town. E3's got, this is now the premier event in the game's calendar, which comes with obviously responsibility, but it comes with criticism.
But the same argument that focus on the awards, it's like, well, it's been the same as every single year. It's like it's never changed. Like it's not going to change. Like I don't necessarily love the format either, but it's what we've got, and it doesn't look like there's any appetite to change it anytime soon. So I just understand why this year of all years it suddenly exploded and all the takes are coming. It's like, well, have you never watched it before?
I think it's got more of a spotlight on it because E3's gone.
Yeah,
you know, it's the only game in town. You have to keep in mind that last year was the first Game Awards in-person one since the pandemic. I mean, it's, you know, it feels like a million miles away, you know, the us all being locked up and none of this stuff happening, but it wasn't. And even the last year's one, it was much reduced scale. I mean, when I went last year, the place was half empty. And it was like, is this what it's usually like? Like, but this year it was like, it was ramped. Like, it's like, wow, you could really feel the energy, you know, in the room. And there was like loads of like mixers and parties afterwards. And it was like, oh, this is like completely different to what it was like last year.
Yeah. I think the problem is like he set a precedent now that's going to be really tricky to kind of undo, because it's impossible to please everyone with these awards. And if they're going to have more awards handed out and longer speeches and stuff, then you're going to get fewer trailers. So then the people who watch it for the trailers, which let's face it is most people, are they going to complain, oh, well, there's less stuff in it this year than there was last year? It's like, yeah, that's because he doesn't want to do a 6-hour show where everyone gets an award and gets a 10-minute speech.
And the mantra going around that Jeff Keighley somehow hates game developers is bollocks, because, you know, you look at the number of, indie developers he had on stage, the number of developers, you know, premiering a totally original games as well. You know, you go and give you get Disney or Amazon or someone like that, if they were sold the Game Awards to them, do you think they've got Hello Games up there? You know, some of these projects, like, absolutely not.
Yeah. My favorite point was when, I forget her name, the woman who worked on Ghostwire Tokyo and turned up again and says, here's my new game. It's about being in a city with like ghosts in it.
Ghosts and wilds.
I felt for her. She had her little girl with her.
Yeah, so on
Twitter. And her little girl's like, it's a toddler age. And So she's at this like after party, and her little girl's like asleep underneath her coat. You know, I think one of her, she had someone with her who was like kind of looking after her, but I wanted to go and say hello, but it was just like, even like she's trying to like put her in a pram to leave. Yeah, at the end
that's
of the
a
night.
Tough and night, isn't it?
And people are still coming up and going like, oh, can I have a photo? And, you know, it's like, mate, she's with a pissing kid.
Yeah. They could knock an hour off it for me, but that's probably because my eyes were staring at my head by the end of it. But you know what? We'll see. It's not going anywhere, so let's just see how it goes. Story number two. Hogwarts Legacy could be the US's first non-COD or Rockstar game to be the bestseller in 15 years. The long and short of this story is, for the first time in 15 years, it might not be Call of Duty or your Red Dead or your Grand Theft Auto that tops the charts. Regardless of what you think about Hogwarts Legacy and that bloody woman, Chris, shouldn't this be the wake-up call for Warner Brothers to be like, maybe we shouldn't pump every single penny we have into live service when this single-player-only game has absolutely stormed it?
Potentially, but not every single-player game is going to have like an IP of that size attached to it. And also, I think it's maybe more of a wake-up call for Activision to pull the finger out and not just assume that it's going to, like, Call of Duty name alone is going to do the business every year. I would say it depends on how you look at it. Like you can look at it in terms of Hogwarts did well, but you can look at it in terms of Call of Duty's dropping the ball, and especially at a time when Xbox is now taking over. And you got to imagine Big Phil and the likes are saying, listen, we need to properly deliver again because we didn't spend all this money on a publisher and, let's face it, an IP that is just starting a downward descent. Like
it comes with a massive caveat that obviously these sales are up till the end of November. When did it come out? It came out at the start of November, right? Modern Warfare 3.
Yeah.
So it's already the number two seller of the whole year. It's overtaken Zelda, which is like Nintendo, one of Nintendo's biggest launches ever. So I really think we should be writing off by the time that's 4 weeks later that Modern Warfare is still on top.
Yeah.
Because it's you know, going to be the Christmas gift for a lot of people, right? I mean, you can't dismiss stats like that where it's like it's the top seller every year. But to your point, yeah, I mean, it's the worst reviewed Call of Duty ever, I think.
Yeah.
It's I do think it deserves to get some sort of like kind of punishment for that, because we talked about it in a podcast a couple of weeks ago. That's so blatant that they just like, you know, package the DLC up to keep things rolling while this acquisition was going on. I'm certain that that won't be the case under Microsoft with the pressure off.
No, you saw when they were posting all their social graphics about like the most engaged COD ever. It's the COD that's had the most bullets shot. Like it's the opposite of an Accolades trailer. Yeah. Like,
you can always tell
the thousand people that bought it are playing more.
When you get the Activision print, they used to do that with Skylanders as well, and you could always kind of tell how well it had done by the press releases you'd got and what they chose to do. Oh, the most single toys sold. Is that okay? So how many copies did it sell then? Like if they don't come out and specifically say we have sold X number of games, then it hasn't gone well, or hasn't gone as well as it has done in the past.
Yeah, I think the Hogwarts Legacy thing, Hogwarts Legacy is one of the only games of the year that has made it into the 8-a-side group chat when I'm being asked if it's something to get for like kids for Christmas and stuff like that. It's that Modern Warfare and EAFC. So it's like made it into, it's obviously, I mean, Harry Potter's like
a lot of main, people have been asking me about PlayStation brand. Portal recently.
Good luck. Good luck trying to get one.
Of course, but that's to my point. This is like the people who don't ask you about games. Yeah. Oh, what's that PlayStation? That's PlayStation handheld. Where do you know where I can get it?
Yeah,
like mums and stuff.
You can get it on eBay. You can get it on Jordan Midler's eBay page for £500.
I worry about the people who do get that. How many people know what they're getting?
Yeah,
that's my concern, because I don't imagine a lot of the mainstream are asking, oh, what about that remote play thing that works with the PS5? I'd imagine some of them must be looking at that and thinking it's a PlayStation Switch.
People love remote play. They're always talking about remote play on TikTok. It's the hot trend. Just finally to this point about Warner Brothers generally, yes, they don't, like, not every IP is Harry Potter, but they also have Batman and Game of Thrones. Like, I feel like they have the fact that only one or two Game of Thrones games and they were pretty small budget came out during the entire length of that TV show when it was the biggest thing in the world. Like, it's wild to me. And the way they're handling DC properties and the gaming space at the minute is just, it's ludicrous. You'll definitely get a sequel to Hogwarts. I wouldn't be surprised if that's practically most of the way done. They've built the castle and stuff, so there's no reason why they wouldn't just kind of get that out. But it's an odd one. Do you think, Chris, we get a Call of Duty next year?
Yeah, we need.
Things already leaked, isn't it?
Yeah, there must be one.
Oh yeah, the Gulf War one. Sorry, are we getting one after that? Are they going to take a break? Is Phil going to come out and go?
But the thing is, this year was supposed to be the break. So the fact that they've pumped the DLC out as a package, I mean, it doesn't have any bearing on Treyarch. Treyarch have spent X years working on their game, so hopefully next year we might get a half decent one. But it is diminishing returns, isn't it? Like, I know, like, we've probably been saying this for 10 years, but that's like, it really is now.
When are they just going to
stop bothering with a campaign? I suppose they'll stop bothering with a campaign when people stop buying it every single year. I'm answering my own question, but it is, it's a bit depressing, isn't it?
It's Danny,
especially when it's going with it now looking like it's going to be going on Game Pass every year. Like, that's another chunk of kind of sales numbers and profits. Like it goes, you can go imagine there's going to be more, even more microtransactions and season passes and stuff. Some sort of way to kind of recoup that money that's going to be lost through Games Pass after Game Pass. So, I'll be curious to see what the picture is in 5 or 6 years' time.
Me too. Story number three, PDP are teasing new guitar controllers amidst Fortnite's Rock Band-like mode. They put up a tweet, peripheral maker PDP, suggesting that in January, new guitar controllers are going to come out. They previously produced guitar controllers for Rock Band 4. They were extremely, extremely limited. As someone who was a Rock Band 4 head, I have first-hand experience with how much the community hated PDP, so this seemed like a lot of people being like, oh yeah, it's been ages since I've had a guitar controller and a guitar game to play, and this Rock Band mode in Fortnite is interesting. But Andy, if they bring these back, is anyone going to bother with plastic tat?
I don't care. if anyone wants to buy some, I've got quite a few in my loft,
mate. And see, if they're in good nick, they're worth a lot of
money. I'm not even joking. They've been used about twice. I've got them in my loft. I've probably got about three.
Let's have a conversation off air, because I'm always in the market for replacement, because I got the full Rock Band 4 set when it came out on PlayStation 4, and it was the banging New Year thing to do. Get Rock Band out, everyone's up for it, because it's essentially karaoke, and then if you were into the instruments, you could play that. However, steaming people dropping these plastic guitars that were brittle to start with, it was a no go. Chris, and we were talking about this last night on the way to the Celtic game, but it's not a guitar controller we need. It's a new DJ controller. Am I right?
Better believe it. We need another set of turntables, another 90-strong list of brilliant mashup songs to remix. DJ Hero 3 would be great, but I don't see that coming anytime soon. I'm up for the guitar thing. Guitar Hero in Rock Band used to be my thing. That was my obsession. And then I severed a nerve in my finger, and I haven't played it since. So I kind of play the piano again, that kind of situation. So I'm kind of worried when these come back, because I'm going to have to try and play it again. But I don't agree that we need a full band set, like, because Andy might agree with me here. Like, the full band experience in Rock Band was ruined for me when we used to work at Future, and Official Xbox Magazine would get the drums out every lunchtime, and Ben at OXM would just batter the drums constantly when the first Rock Band came out, and that was soul destroying. So, like, I could do without that, just the guitar.
The amount of tat we had around the office in those days, I was going to say, it's a really annoying era. Like, my memories of that era is just bloody controllers everywhere, like bits of guitar and drums.
Nearly broke my ankle on that Tony Hawk skateboard controller. He just had to stand on the skateboard and
roll
it. It's like, this is just like real life. But yeah, it's like, I've not played that Fortnite Rock Band ripoff yet, but by all accounts, it's decent.
Yeah. It's hard to call that ripoff when it's literally why they bought harmonics. Like, put them down the mines to do that. It's just, it's funny that Fortnite has went for this like wee battle royale game that like pivoted to copy PUBG, and now it's like Peter Griffin singing Olivia Rodrigo in the middle of this Rock Band mode. When you can pop over for a game of Lego Minecraft in Fortnite. They made the real metaverse. But yeah, if these guitar controllers are nice and they're not £1 billion, I would maybe get one, but not for a Rock Band or anything like that. Just get Clone Hero a week ago, that's all I'll say. Get Clone Hero a week ago. Clone Hero is perfectly legal. The things you need to do to make it work, perhaps not, but who would know about that? We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we have some chat about Blade's exclusivity and the one and only Bobby Kotick. See you in a minute.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We are back. This is a bit of a quirky one, and it may be much ado about nothing, but I do love winding people up. Is Blade exclusive? Both Bethesda and Disney have been hesitant to comment on it, notably before the Blade trailer at the Game Awards. There was no Xbox exclusive or Game Pass exclusive or Game Pass branding on it, and for some reason everyone's being very hush hush. Chris, a great conspiracy or nothing?
I think it will be an exclusive, and I think
to what though? The PlayStation 5?
Pure guesswork. I think they're just building hype for it so that people start thinking, and then during one of their next big showcases they'll go, nah, it's exclusive, mate. Game Pass day one, and then everyone will go, and go, I need to buy an Xbox now. Maybe. I don't know. This would have been a good time to kind of say only on Xbox, but who knows? Who knows how Xbox works these days?
I see the argument going about that, like, well, it's Arcane Austin, so it's Arcane Lyon, so everyone knows that means Xbox. It's like, you ask a million people on the street about one of them, will go, oh yeah, Arcane Lyon, the Dishonored people that are under Bethesda, we know that means Xbox exclusive. I feel like this is setting them up for PlayStation fans to get unnecessarily hopeful, and then for them to come out and be like, no, no, no. Andy, why are they not just saying this is an Xbox exclusive?
It's just, this is all mischief.
Yeah.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure someone will. When they announced Indiana Jones, did they confirm it was Xbox exclusive immediately? Did they
No, but that was pre-acquisition.
Starfield. I'm sure there's another one as well that I'm missing. Look, if anyone's ever been involved in any of these deals, right, Marvel, dealing with someone on the scale of Marvel, Disney, it's a lawyer, like a legal nightmare. There'll be all sorts of like legal hoops which are restricting them from, you know, saying certain things. And I imagine, I mean, Xbox didn't even put the blog post up until like a week later, like about it. Like, they can't say a thing about this game without it going through 50 Disney lawyers. You know, like, it's just it making mischief of it. I mean, you look at their strategy as well, assuming it's like a single player game, it's, you know, it doesn't kind of fit their mold for what they stick on multi-platform. It's going to be Xbox and PC. Like, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, it maybe it looks odd that they're not saying anything, but you're not, when you've ever dealt with a, you know, a Disney or a Marvel, it isn't.
It feels like it's far too early. Like that kind of trailer was such a tease. It's like that's game's a way away. It's not like it's going to come out in 3 months' time. And like,
yeah, I think they've been working, according to LinkedIn, they've been working on it for at least 2 years.
Yeah, which so you've got to imagine like maybe 2025 ish.
Oh, probably the earliest, yeah.
Yeah, so you're going to get like at a showcase in the summer or even later than that. Then you'll get to see the game, and then they'll start giving it the exclusive and Game Pass and all this kind of stuff. That's when that just now they're just putting the feelers out there so people know that Microsoft and Xbox are still making games. Yeah. And then they'll give us the details later.
And considering they've just been through a lengthy court battle, the crux of which a lot of the time was exclusivity, it's probably not the worst time for them to just be no comment about it. I saw people bringing up like, oh, well, Spider-Man's only exclusive to PlayStation because of the relationship with Sony. And it's like, well, Wolverine's exclusive to PlayStation 2. And it's just, I imagine it will be Xbox, PC.
And in Indiana Jones as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's...
like it's going to be Xbox exclusive.
I think maybe the only franchise that Disney wouldn't make console exclusive would be Star Wars potentially, because that's so massive. But I don't know, that non-existent Knights of the Old Republic remake was going to be PS5 exclusive.
I think you're forgetting Star Wars Kinect.
Oh, I am. I'm riding Solo, Han Solo, Han Solo. Mind when that was what Star Wars was. When before the new films, it was like, oh yeah, mind those good films for the 70s and 80s and that absolute dross for the early 2000s.
In some ways, I look back positively at those days.
And yeah, now bring all back of Jar Jar. Star Wars is just that dross from the early 2000s.
Oh, bring back Jar Jar Binks. All is forgiven.
The Last Jedi is the second best Star Wars film, as we can all agree. Final story. This is one for Andy Robinson. Bobby Kotick's post-Activision career could involve Premier League football. He's been linked to a minnow team called West Ham United. The publisher's long-standing boss agreed to remain CEO of Activision through the end of 2023, following the $69 billion acquisition. He's in line to make a lot of money. And according to news reporter Sean Whetstone, Kotick might be interested in investing a small stake in West Ham United. Andy, did this send shivers down your spine?
It's like they're just all coming together of all of my worst nightmares, right? Yeah, it's I don't know. It's probably not massively relevant to the people who listen to this show.
It doesn't stop us talking about Celtic all the time.
I know. I wouldn't worry about relevance to our audience.
Kotick's clearly out the door next month. I think he is a lot of clever wording that he's agreed to remain a CEO through 2023. So it's kind of like half saying he won't be there next year.
Yeah.
And you kind of expect like people sell companies to make loads of money, not to like work for Phil Spencer. He's going to, you know, he's going to have need stuff to do. The Premier League is like increasingly becoming dominated by American investors. It kind of makes sense for someone like him to go and get a stake in something. I mean, it's only, thank Christ, a 10% stake, so I'm not going to have to pay microtransactions for every corner and goal I see.
So McTavish playing up front.
Yeah. So let's see, you know, watch this space.
Yeah, I think it's funny when these American investors come in, it's like Tom Brady has a like not 1% share in Birmingham City, and they're acting as if he's Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney. Like, it's just, stay away from our beautiful game unless like a billionaire, unless Bill Gates wants to buy Celtic, I'd be up for that. Yeah.
You know the Kotick thing's gone too far if you see Tony Hawk up in the stand. Up in the box, and you'll know that they.
I mean, if he does a cool trick off of it, then I'd be up for it. But yeah, that is the most VGC story there could possibly be. It's a bit of a shorter show this week. We've got stuff to be doing, including the Pokemon DLC, which came out today. I've played a bit of it. It's very hard, according to a friend of the site and Pokemon font of knowledge, Joe Merrick from Serebii. In order to unlock the entire pool of Pokemon, you need, I think he said there was 12,000 battle points, and you get battle points from doing these wee side quests. These side quests each give you about 10 battle points. So guess what I'll be doing for the rest of my natural life?
Mining battle points.
Mining mother effing battle points. Apparently you get a times 2 bonus to battle points if you play with a friend, so I'm about that away from setting up a partner's Switch and putting them together. Just sitting there with two Switch controllers going like that. As Andy mentioned earlier, VGC's Game of the Year has been announced. It is Alan Wake 2. I think that was a banger choice, not only because I was the one who argued for it, but I think it's exactly the kind of game that I think should be rewarded in terms of it was a punt on a sequel to a cult classic from 10 years ago that no one really remembered. And it's to me, it felt a bit like giving Remedy credit for not just Alan Wake, but Control and everything they've been up to. Andy, were you seizing?
Absolutely nothing to do with the fact that I ended up in a hotel room last week at 1 in the morning, which I believe was Sam Lake's hotel room with all of the Alan Wakes, trying not to fall asleep in the corner and get buckarooed.
When I woke up and saw that message on Slack, and my partner turned to me and she was like, "What is wrong? Why do you look? Why is that?
Why are you crying? Why are you crying, Jordan?
Why have you woken up so angry?" I was like, "Don't worry about it, mate. Do not worry.
Stop hitting yourself, Jordan."
Fellow person excluded from LA, Chris. Saying that was a decent shout. You've been writing 10 books, so you've not had a chance to jump in. You'll get to it around the heat death of the universe once you've played Zelda.
It's on my 3-week Christmas backlog, along with Zelda and Mario Spider-Man.
Oh my God. Just basically anything nominated for Game of the Year at the Game
if I've got a wee half hour after that, I'll stick Baldur's Gate on. Yeah, no, by all accounts, I mean, I love the first Alan Wake, so like of my backlog, it's kind of near the top of the list. So I put full trust in your as the person on VGC who's played every game this year. I put full trust in your decision that that's the one. So yeah, I was happy to go along with that because my choice of what have I reviewed this year? Forza. Forza's not going to win it.
Some Disney carton pish. No, probably.
Lego 2K Drive and AEW weren't going to win it. So yeah, I'll go along with that. What? Although I expect to see tweets on January when I finally get around to playing it and go, wait a minute, it's a shite.
Yeah.
I
why are they all dancing? Why is it so Finnish?
I revoke my vote for the Game of the Year.
I've got a lot of time for all the people who are definitely picking up that game after seeing the song performance. Wow, this looks like a nice, light, entertaining jaunt.
And then they go
you turn it on and there's like a 20-stone man with his knob out.
And then every time they die, they see like an image of what essentially might as well be a real life dead body with like the head caved in. Like, it's fucking brilliant. What a game. What a horrible, horrible great game.
I wish I could be there to see people who bought it based on that to play that opening mission.
Yeah. They get traumatized for 4 hours and then they get to the musical bit and they're like, oh, is that now? Okay. great. Good stuff. What a banger of a game. Next week, against all the odds, we will be in person for the first ever VGC podcast where we can physically batter each other. Looking forward to that greatly. I told someone that we were doing that and they were like, what, in front of an audience? I was like, yeah, we've sold out the O2.
You're going to bring my mum.
So look forward to that. It'll be a shenanigan packed show.
I will obviously be dressed as a baby Jesus just to keep the theme going. It has to be done.
I will be Superman or the holiday armadillo. We Friends reference there for the kids.
That's good.
R.I.P.
For the old, for the middle-aged people.
Yeah. R.I.P. Chinandala Bong. Check out YouTube, Twitter, VGC_news. Check out our TikTok as well. If you want a little gaming t-shirt, you can go to gambitgaming.co.uk. Use the code VGC for 10% off. Today's decoration is this Elden Ring inspired Elden Ring. Speaking of
the Elden Ring inspired Elden Ring.
Yeah. Speaking of Elden Ring,
heavily inspired.
Chris, identify your hoodie.
I believe I've worn it before. It's Jet Set Radio.
Okay.
From I believe Insert Coins from a sale.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, because we previously spoke yeah. about how every one of their t-shirts costs a mortgage. Andy, yeah. Have you got a gaming t-shirt on? Is it just general Japan nonsense?
I wear bloody gaming t-shirts.
You always wear gaming t-shirts?
Sitting in a room full of gaming shit.
It would be a bit much though, wouldn't it? But this is my gaming. This is my gaming shit room. There's no other gaming shit anywhere else. It's just all in here.
Yeah. Andy's just constantly wearing a Stone Island. He sits with a badge in during every single recording.
You know, if you're a painter and decorator, you don't like, you know, go to the pub and like, you know, talk about paint.
Yeah.
wear a t-shirt with a Tenby Dulux logo in the corner. Yeah.
I'm very much like, this is my mind, like, you know, like in coming back to Alan Wake 2, this is like my mind place in here. This is where I come to, my gaming shit place. But otherwise, I mean, it's dual approaches, isn't it? When I'm off, I'm off. Yeah. Like, I like to not think about video games other than my 10 hours a day working on video games.
People wouldn't believe this because of the state of me, but the rest of my house is pretty much video game, like, devoid as well. It's just because, I mean, there's two dogs and a stupid cat running about, so I don't to have anything out there. But
yeah, I'm the same, but not by choice. I've got my room, and then that's what I'm allowed. So yeah, agreed.
Right, I'm away to do more of this Pokemon DLC before I naturally expire. Join us next week for another episode of VGC A Video Game Podcast. Thanks so much to Grant Kirkhope for use of the VGC podcast theme. Where is Grant this week? It's impossible to tell. He's floating about. Every time I open Twitter, top of my For You page is Grant Kirkhope in an airport on his way to some award show or some signing or another. We need to get him to do a sequel to the VGC podcast theme in the style of We Sing, and we'll get Chris to do a wee dance to it. Would you be up for that, Chris?
Yes, once I figure out what that is, having played the game.
What they need to do is give him the bloody new Perfect Dark game.
I mean, yes, if they don't, it's just going to sound like every other game.
I can confirm it is going to sound generic as fuck.
Confirmed.
You know,
that's going to be on one of those Xbox Twitters with an AI profile picture. They're going to post that with like green dots as bullet points, being like confirmed by VGC.
Generic as fuck.
And then I'll get a picture of my front door sent to me by one of them. Join us next week. Until then, you can follow me on Twitter at Jordan Midler, Chris at Skillet1888, Andy at Andy_VGC. Say goodbye, Andy.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Come on the Celtic, and we'll see you next week.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.